Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my pleasure and privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. The host and founder of the program is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. On today's program, Carol will be talking with Dr. Lynn Webster. He's the author of the book, The Painful Truth, What Chronic Pain is Really Like and Why It Matters to Each of Us. It's published by Webster Media. But first, let's kick off the hour with Carol Marks in conversation with Peter Sacco, author of The Internet Apocalypse, The World Without Internet, How Would You Survive? This is a fun book that explores what the world would be like without internet technology should the Earth get attacked with solar flares or meteors.
One day I was doing a talk at a Comic-Con in Toronto, and it was a couple years ago, and I was having lunch slash coffee with one of the actors from The Walking Dead, which is a favorite show of mine, actually. It was David Morrissey. He played the Covenant on The Walking Dead. And Dave and I were talking about, you know, just life in general and all that stuff. And then I remember walking out onto Yonge Street, downtown Toronto, and I'm watching all these people walking by on their cell phones, totally oblivious to what's going on around them, almost getting hit by cabs going by, buses and that, because they're just so focused on their phones. And I thought, good Lord, this is like literally a Walking Dead in real life.
And it's sad.
And then I'm thinking to myself, and then, you know, it was a series of progressions. Later, ironically, that day, I lost my own phone. And I remember we were sitting at a dinner. There was a group of us from my TV show. And they said, well, you must be really upset. You can't get any messages. I just thought, no, I could care less about the messages because I'm not a texter myself. I can't stand it. I says, I'm more concerned about somebody getting my phone and, you know, using it for fraud purposes. And then I got into the whole thing, the idea about what if there wasn't any internet? How would it affect people? And being a professor in addiction studies for 20 years and writing books on addiction, if you want to call the millennials and the Y generationers would be totally oblivious. So anybody after 1994, this is all they've ever known, the internet. And anybody after 2000 and whatever, all they've ever known is texting. So I want to look at what would actually happen, how addicted people would become. And I think you'd see a lot of addictions, and especially the millennial populations.
How difficult do you think it would be, just say theoretically, you know, the internet collapsed, how difficult is it going to be for them to cope with communicating in a different way, in a more personal way, using verbal clues, writing letters, and using their imagination, which you really don't have to do when you're typing away texting.
Nonverbal communication is becoming a extinct lost art, which normally used to be, you know, instinctual within us. So it's kind of a play on words and, you know, an oxymoron where, you know, it's what's instinctual is becoming extinct because people are now forfeiting their innate abilities, their abilities to communicate and connect at a human level, and they're going synthetic. Like, it's all about texting, and it's all about shortcuts to perceptions, which even in verbal communication, I've got tons of university students and college students, and a lot of them today are having issues with spelling simple words and parlaying a paragraph together, putting an actual paragraph together, because they're so used to speaking in almost like little word blasts that have emoticons after, and this is what I'm seeing actually in essays showing up.
Yeah, these little codes. And you think about, you know, the young kids. I see some of my friends' young kids having a terrible time getting unplugged from their phone or their internet when they should be sleeping. And you know, when you're growing up, you need your sleep.
Well, that's just what it is. And I think that's what's really interesting with this, is what generally used to be something that would complement our lives, like a regular telephone. You'd leave it at home when you went out. And it's the same thing with computers. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I bring my laptop with me. but you don't see me on my laptop everywhere. If I have to excuse myself from a restaurant and use the men's washroom, you don't see me bolt in there with my laptop or my phone. And I've walked into bathrooms where everybody's on their phone. I see guys standing at a urinal texting. I thought, wow, there's multitasking. I never thought I could see that happening.
Unbelievable. But, and, you know, I learned so many interesting things from your book. And one of them that, you know, I never thought about was the gender issue, the difference between the way men and women use the Internet. And you say that women really would suffer the most if the Internet collapses. And what made you say that?
Yeah, absolutely, and it's not a chauvinistic thing by any sorts of imagination or sexist. It's just that overall, research has shown, you can go all the way back to landmark books like John Gray's, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, Deborah Tannen's, You Just Don't Understand Me. Women were the generally better emotive communicators. They were greater at their androgynous skills, meaning they used to and traditionally play both roles, masculinity and femininity, because they're child-rearing, working out in the workforce and all that kind of stuff. And what's most importantly, women have that ability to multitask. Research has shown in the past they've got a thicker connective tissue between the right and left hemispheres of the brain. I believe it's the corpus callosum. So when you're looking at that there, they were multitaskers, which allowed a lot of women the better abilities to communicate. When women speak, they want, you know, the underlying level. So if I say to you, Carol, it's raining cats or dogs, you're taking that as, oh, okay, he really cares about me. He doesn't want me to get wet. He wants me to bring my umbrella and all that stuff. Whereas from the guy's perspective, he used to be, well, big deal, it's raining hard. That's how I would look at it. But what's happening today is because so many people are texting, they're sending up these small messages, the intended messages are not being completely sent, and you're getting a lot of misunderstandings. And once again, it ties back to the non-verbal communication skills. I always used to joke about this, and I've joked about this in many books, especially my book, Why Women Want What They Can't Have. If a guy is lying, his wife or girlfriend knows. She's like the Gestapo. She's like CIA intelligence. She can read him like a book in the past. Whereas if a woman's lying, a guy could be oblivious to it. It could be going on for years. And it's an absolute truth because guys just don't look for that deeper level traditionally. So nowadays, Carol, men are the guys who text less, and we actually speak more and more face-to-face, and we actually over the phone.
And so really, is there communication more, you know, on the intimate, more just on the face value of it, not the emotions behind what they're thinking about?
Yes, that's what would seem to be happening, because it's the kids that are doing all the texting nowadays. And if you still look at it, generally speaking, boys are not the males are not as texting as much as the females are, because this is what is now happening. Traditionally, females were the better communicators. They put more emphasis and more time into their communication. So now what has gone from verbal, eye-to-eye communication that then went to verbal over-the-phone speaking communication is now going towards texting. So they're the ones who are texting more. And, you know, when I was doing the research for this book, I did insights into, well, gee, how many people are doing this texting? And I found at the high school level, I had one fellow report that a stepdaughter had sent out 40,000 texts in 1 month.
Oh, my goodness. Unbelievable. Can't be doing too much else, right?
Well, you look at that there, and I'm thinking, well, man, I've written close to 30 books. 40,000 texts a month, if I was doing that, I'm doing the math, man, I could really put out some really fun romance novels with all those words.
You're listening to a conversation between Carol Marx and Peter Sacco, author of The Internet Apocalypse, The World Without Internet. How would you survive? I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues with part two of Carol Marx and Peter Sacco in just a moment.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. New guidelines from the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism for persons 65 and older reveal that if women drink more than 7 drinks per week or greater than 3 drinks per occasion, and men 14 drinks per week or greater than 4 drinks per occasion, you're at risk for illness or injury. As the body ages, the tolerance to alcoholic beverages decreases. Literally, at 65 and older, you are unable to process alcoholic beverages as, say, a person that is 45. Alcoholic overuse and intolerance can worsen mental confusion, problems with balance and falls, depressive disorders, dehydration, inadequate nutrition, adverse interaction with some medications, and can lead to social isolation. One drink is 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of liquor, or the amount in a shot glass. Are you ready to acknowledge that at age 65 and older, that fewer than 7 drinks per week or 1 drink per day is the limit and offers you the advantages of leading a healthier and safer lifestyle? I'm Suzanne Hannes. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
When we ran out, we stopped using it.
Why would you stop?
Why undo all the good that's been accomplished? We thought everything was fine, and that was not a good thing.
No.
He started stinking. It was awful.
Shedding comes back. Loss of hair, lots of dandruff.
Scratching will return. His shedding will increase.
If I ever took Roy off of Dinovite, he would go back to his hair loss.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dinovite.
When I get to about 3/4.
Oh, no. I've got a couple more scoops.
It's time to place my order. Dinovite.com.
Each and every day she is getting that Dinovite.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dinovite. If it's working, don't quit.
Don't do what I did and run out.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys. Just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison, the anchor chair, and we continue now with part two of a conversation between Carol Marks, the host of our program, and Peter Sacco, author of The Internet Apocalypse, The World Without Internet. How would you survive?
Let's talk about a couple of positive things that might happen if the Internet collapsed for a brief period of time or for a longer period of time. I mean, one of the things that it might impact kind of some of the bad ways that it can be used when it comes to our sex lives, because all the pornography that's available on the Internet, it's so easy to access. And then, you know, I found out, I was amazed, you know, that there was a website, was in the news, that makes it really easy for married people to cheat on their partners. So any comments about all that?
It's interesting. I'm glad you bring it up, because right when we were going to publication with that, that's when that dating service for married people and those in relationships literally got, with their pun intended, pants down, where you had something, I forget how many it was, like we're talking millions of people that had their names out there and that were doing this. And I think that's one, you're absolutely right. What is happening is, because people can bring whatever form of entertainment with them wherever they go on their phones, and generally speaking, it used to be that a lot of people would get caught up into pornography due to arousal, and also secondary boredom. It would, so now what you're getting is you're getting the addictive component with the boredom component, and then you've got guys that generally would have to go to either to an adults-only theater to watch a porn film. Then it was easier to do it by going to a place, renting a video. Then it was streaming online where you could watch it on your computer. But now the scary part is that you've got not only pornographic sites, which have, I believe, I saw one estimate between 200 million plus pages devoted to porn online, and it's males are the number one consumers of it, to them actually going onto websites where not only can they watch the stuff, but they can interact and they can set up these types of situations because it's just there. They have it literally, and I joke about it, right in the palm of their hands.
Right, and you know what? I mean, it's just the whole a huge extent of it. You know, my poor little mind just can't grasp it all. So another important thing, though, that would happen if the Internet, you know, was shut down would be the lessening of online bullying, because that seems to really be thriving because of the, you know, if you're on the Internet, you're anonymous. So I understand that you're doing a campaign to counteract bullying and the sense of isolation that can go along with it. So can you tell us about your thoughts about bullying on the Internet, how it's grown, and your campaign?
Yeah, definitely. Bullying is something that is very real and near and dear to me. I've sat on various panels, and I've, you know, being a professional in this field, I've seen the effects of it that are all the way from post-traumatic stress disorder, we're talking extremes here, all the way to suicide. And with the Internet, it creates a form of an anonymity, and a lot of people are also creating their false bravados or personas of themselves, their alter egos, if you will. They're the Bruce Banners in their everyday lives, and then they become the Incredible Hulk when they go online. And a lot of people are using it to vent their frustrations and take it out on other people. So I've teamed up, and I work with the Center for Abuse Awareness here up in Canada. It's called abusehurts.ca, but there's also the American version, abusehurts.com, which we work with. It's a really important organization. So from there, I've written a series of books. And by the way, folks, these are 100% completely free on my website, bullyingisforthebirds.com, or you can get it right at petersacco.com, petersacco.com. And the latest free book that I've got out there is Bullying in Seniors, which looks at elder abuse. And I think it's a very...
So important.
Very prominent thing that is happening, Carol, that so many seniors are in abusive situations, whether it be from their own kids, whether it be in retirement homes, and I think the public needs to take a greater look into this, that there's a lot of seniors that are enduring abuse and bullying, and they should not have to go through this.
And we talked about it a little earlier, the fact that being on the Internet in various capacities can become terribly, terribly addicting and difficult to get over. And in your book, you have all kinds of tips and things that people can do to kind of break this addiction and use the Internet for only, you know, for really helpful and useful services.
Yeah, totally. I'll be the first person to say, hey, I love the Internet. I think the Internet is absolutely fabulous. I think it should be there to complement your life, accent your life, supplement it in terms of finding information, forms of entertainment, but it shouldn't be with you 24/7. You know, there is fun stuff on there as well. There's games. I know both my parents, they love it. They go online and they play, you know, they've been retired now, God, 15, 20 years, and they're on there playing video games sometimes because they just love it. But they don't make their whole life about it. And I think that's the extreme on the other way. There's a lot of kids that, you know, get caught up on it because it's just idle hands or evil hands, to use, you know, a catchphrase. But I think the key thing is you've got to separate yourself from it. Don't bring it everywhere you go. Rather, bring yourself everywhere you go, you know, and enjoy yourself and enjoy
yourself.
The company of others.
Not your phone. Definitely. It can be so annoying. And it happens all the time. And I think that just being able to distance yourself from the constant use of the Internet will really enable you to have a calmer life and balance the demands of work and your personal life, making it a lot easier to do both and have more quality time for yourself and your friends. And I wanted to ask you this. If you had to say, Peter, who is this book written for? You know, does it have to do with a lot about the way you feel about the facts of paper that are in your life or not in your life?
I'd have to say the book is written for anybody that really wants to not only revisit how the past was and how the past is still the present and the future going forward, that the old ways of doing things, the values that we had in terms of communication, are still there and they should be prominent. And it's also for those that want to embrace the future, to embrace the present as well, too, because it all goes together. I really believe in what Einstein said, you know, that basically time is relative. It doesn't really exist. We only create it for ourselves and a sense of it to kind of measure between points. And I contend that that's what it's all about, is that it's kind of funny because you can just look at records, vinyl, that it's made a comeback because people love it. Today's generation loves them because it's everything to a degree is timeless, and it's only redundant when we lose it in terms of its perspective and what it supplies. And I believe everything has a place. And I just think people have to prioritize things.
That's Peter Sacco in conversation with Carol Marx. His book is titled The Internet Apocalypse, The World Without Internet. How Would You Survive? It's published by Dr. Zed Publishing. If you want more information, go to petersacco.com. That's Peter, S-A-C-C-O, .com. If you want to find out more about Carol Marx and our program, go to atouchofgray.com. That's atouchofgray.com, and we spell gray with an E. Coming up next, Carol Marx in conversation with Dr. Lynn Webster about opioids and pain relief. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment. Michael Harrison here with you on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Very proud to be with you on this program. This program has been on the air in one form or another consistently now for over two decades. Kind of runs below the radar. It's heard on weekends on great talk radio stations around the country. And what I'm really proud about in terms of this program, in which I have the opportunity to serve as anchor, not as host. Carol Marx is the host, and I certainly am not the only voice on this show. We have a roundtable of outstanding personalities, experts, and broadcasters. What I love about this show is that in an industry marked by concern, focus, obsession with youth, and believe me, I'm about as young thinking as anybody you'll meet. Sometimes I'm even accused of being immature. And so I'm all for that, and I'm all for looking ahead. But I'm also also for fairness, and I'm also for respect. And the media in America, driven by, obviously, Madison Avenue and commercial concerns, focuses primarily on young people. And if somebody's over 50 or 55 or 60, they quite often find that there's a lot lacking in terms of what's available in the mainstream media. So this program, which was conceived and developed by Carol Marx more than 20 years ago, originally was called Senior Focus, and it evolved into A Touch of Gray, and I became involved with it along the way, is something that really provides a service in as much as it unashamedly, unabashedly, unapologetically brings information to people via this wonderful medium of radio that is of use, of interest, of service, of comfort, of support to people over 50 years of age and their families, which is why I say at the beginning of the program, children of all ages, because so many people in their 50s find themselves in a situation that has been kind of accurately and colorfully termed the sandwich generation, meaning they have children, adult children, still living with them, and abiding by the rule that came down a long time ago, honor thy father and thy mother, they have their parents living with them. In many cases, these parents are in their 80s, 90s, and are living at home. And the amount of pressure that can be put on somebody dealing with adult children and senior parents all under one roof is extraordinary, and it's a phenomenon that in many ways I applaud. I'm all for families staying together. But also, there are people who are in need of support and information. So in many ways, A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, is in fact a program for children of all ages. But I salute Carol Marx. I think that she has done and continues to do a remarkable job. And she does it under sometimes the worst of conditions because, like the rest of us, she's not getting any younger either. But she drives herself to research and get the information needed and select guests and topics. And not only that, she travels around the world and brings information from other countries on how their healthcare systems operate and how the services that they provide for senior citizens there are taken care of and done. And she brings that information back, not to mention she acts as a model, as a role model for people to get up and get out and live life and do things. And she's done everything from, she's explored, you know, if there were four corners on this planet, as the saying goes, she's been to all four of them. Check her out at the website, atouchofgrey.com. Gray is spelled with an E. And I just wanted to mention that she is one fine lady, and we're grateful to be involved with her in this project.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgrey.com.
My golden retriever, Sundance, is a lot more playful now. She has more pep and energy than I've seen in years.
Tons of energy. Petey is having fun again. He's got a shiny coat and a good healthy weight.
Molly's been having 4 scoops a day. She pushes her little bowl all the way across the room, emptying every last single crumb. She has slimmed down and gotten this puppy look.
She's got life. She's got energy. She's got stuff to give.
We get asked all the time when we're at shows, how do you get your dog so healthy and shiny and glossy?
DinoVite.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Family will be on Dynavite for the rest of his life. Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DinoVite.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we continue now with Carol Marx in conversation with Dr. Lynn Webster. Dr. Lynn Webster has written a book, The Painful Truth, What Chronic Pain is Really Like and Why It Matters to Each of Us, published by Webster Media. He's dedicated more than 3 decades to becoming an expert in the field of pain management. He's Vice President of Scientific Affairs of PRA Health Sciences and immediate past President of the American Academy of Pain Medicine. We begin the conversation with Dr. Webster discussing the limitations of opioids for pain relief.
We don't have many good treatment options, and we haven't put the resources behind discovering the priorities, frankly. We haven't placed the priorities on trying to find alternatives or ways to treat pain. And kind of as a default, opioids have been used because of a failed healthcare system where they don't give or provide coverage for alternative treatments that are available. And yet even those that are available are marginal in their ability to help many people with pain. Having said that, though, there are treatments that can be very helpful. But opioids tend not to be as helpful as we would like.
Now, you started out treating patients suffering from chronic pain in a hospital setting, and you developed a new technique as far as delivering pain medication to the spine and the nerves below it that help patients. And was that what led you to leave a hospital setting and start your own pain clinic?
Yes, you know, if you don't mind, I'll tell you this. This was a moment in my career which changed the direction of my life and my career. It just happened that there were a lot of things occurring in the field of medicine in the mid-80s, late 70s and mid-80s, and I started practice in 1980. But that's when we learned there were opioid receptors in the brain and in the spinal cord, and if we could deliver opioids to those locations, we might be able to mitigate pain. But we also learned that in low amounts of concentration of a local anesthetic like Novocaine, we call it bupivacaine, it delivered to the spine area like in an epidural, we could block the pain that's being produced in the body as it has to go to the spinal cord and then to the brain for us to experience pain. If I could block that, and that's what we learned back then, and also allow people to walk while blocking it, so I'm not blocking motor nerves, just sensory nerves, then the brain and the spinal cord would never know that there was pain in the body. And that technique and that combination of using a little bit of local anesthetic and an opioid, I used in a woman called Dorothy. And Dorothy was going into the operating room to have a partial lung resection for cancer. So, of course, her focus was all about the cancer. And I had never actually performed this procedure before in the mid part of the back, upper part of the back. And it's pretty dangerous to do, or it would be, if you're not trained. And so after a lot of research and thinking about it and practice, I placed an epidural in the thoracic area, it's the lung area, and began an infusion of local anesthetic with the opioid. And to my surprise, he required very little anesthetic during the operation, where they're separating the ribs and pulling them apart and resecting them basically to get the lung out and the cancer. So at the end of the operation, I allowed her to wake up from the general anesthetic that I was giving her, and discovered that she could actually move herself from the operating bed onto the gurney, which is what we would normally take people then to the intensive care unit following one of these operations, because pain is so severe that they can't take in deep breaths. And in her case, she moved herself, which demonstrated she wasn't suffering a great deal, and we took her directly to the recovery room. And within 15 minutes, Carol, she was standing next to her bed in the recovery room with the arm on the side of her thoracic incision, a big, long 14-inch incision from the sternum to her spine in the back. She was able to lift that arm and put it above her head and pose for me as if she was a model. That was a eureka moment for me. It was an incredible experience, because I had never seen anything so dramatic in my career, nor could I ever imagine anything ever happening that I could relieve so much pain and so much suffering that I thought I was on the precipice of a new frontier in pain medicine. And it was.
Now, are they still, are pain management clinics and pain management doctors still using those shots to deaden the nerves, that are close to the spine? Is that something that's still in use today?
Yeah, actually, it's routine now. And when I tell this story that I just told you, young doctors look at me like, what? We do that all the time. What do you mean? That's the way it should be done. And so it is. You have to put it in perspective of the timing of all of this. But, yes, there are many different variations in ways in which axial pain, that is, you know, paraspinal along the vertebral bodies, we can block nerves. Sometimes it's just for a short time, an hour or two. And other times, if we place a catheter so we can run continuous infusions, we can provide weeks and months of relief.
Now, getting back to heavy-duty pain medications, the opiates, sometimes they're really beneficial and they're really needed by patients. And I thought, you know, it's so necessary to talk about the new opiate rules that have come out from the Drug Enforcement Agency that really are so difficult for both physicians and their patients to have to operate under it. And as a pain management physician, you found yourself working under these rules, and they really had what you call, and it's certainly so true, chilling effect on people in chronic pain. So what happened to you, and how do the people who really need these opiates suffer under these rules?
Well, there's a it is a difficult situation today. We unfortunately some 20 years ago or 30 years ago now almost felt that opioids were without any risk. We could give whatever we needed to whomever we wanted at any dose, and there was very little risk associated with it. That was naive. We have learned over the last 25 years or so that there are a subset of individuals that, when exposed to the opioids, will express the disease of addiction or abuse the drugs for a number of different reasons. Mostly, though, for people in pain, they overuse or misuse the medications because they're just trying to get out of pain. That's different than somebody who's trying to seek a high. Yet they can both be dangerous. So over the last 25 years, there have been a flood of these pills out on the market, and the people that want them for psychoactive purposes, to get high or to abuse them for the wrong reasons, have been harmed. And we've had a tremendous increase in number of people admitted for addiction, and we have people dying from overdose that should not be dying. And so in an effort to try to curb that, almost every lawmaker and policymaker has stepped up to try to intervene with laws or regulations or policies. And as a result, Some of this has led to prosecution of doctors and pharmacists and even pharmaceutical companies or even large pharmacy chains or huge fines. And when that happens, when there's a prosecution, that is when the lawmakers or the DEA and the U.S. attorneys accuse doctors of wrongdoing and criminal act, that sends a huge chilling effect throughout the medical community because no other area in medicine are doctors subject to criminal liability if their patients have bad outcomes or if they have bad behaviors. But that's not true when you prescribe an opioid, and it's largely because opioids fall under a different category that is under the control of the DEA and the U.S. attorney.
That's Dr. Lynn Webster in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled The Painful Truth, What Chronic Pain Is Really Like and Why It Matters to Each of Us, published by Webster Media. And we will continue with this conversation in just a moment.
My golden retriever, Sundance, is a lot more playful now. She has more pep and energy than I've seen in years.
Tons of energy.
Petey is having fun again. He's got a shiny coat and a good healthy weight.
Molly's been having 4 scoops a day. She pushes her little bowl all the way across the room, emptying every last single crumb. She has slimmed down and gotten this puppy look.
She's got life. She's got energy. She's got stuff to give.
We get asked all the time when we're at shows, how do you get your dog so healthy and shiny and glossy?
DinoVite.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Family will be on Dynavite for the rest of his life.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DinoVite.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We return now to our conversation between the host of our program, Carol Marks, and Dr. Lynn Webster. In this section, Carol begins by asking Dr. Webster about the impact new laws will have upon patients regarding painkillers.
The new rules, you know, state that you have to, you can't, call your doctor and get a refill. You've got to check in every 90 days. And, you know, this must be very difficult for a lot of patients that don't have or have transportation, and it also, you know, makes it difficult for them in other areas. So I was wondering about, you know, the effects of these new laws on patients themselves.
Yes, you know, you're referring to the upscheduling of hydrocodone.
Right.
Hydrocodone comes in different brand names like Vicodin and Lortab, and that is that's hydrocodone, which is the opioid, along with acetaminophen, which a lot of people know of as Tylenol. And a year ago now, a little more than a year ago, the DEA was successful in upscheduling this to Schedule 2. They were Schedule 3, which means as a Schedule 3, a doctor can call in a prescription. A patient can call and say, I'm hurting, I need a little more, can you call it in? And you can do that with a Schedule 3. You cannot do that with Schedule 2s. They are viewed as more abusive. People or at least the DEA thinks that they can be abused more easily and cause more harm. So a Schedule 2 requires that patients be seen more frequently, usually on a monthly basis. There's a limited amount that can be provided. That has had significant adverse effects for a lot of people. My colleagues and I have conducted a study, and in the first 100 days after the upregulation, we've published it in an abstract and soon to be in a journal. And up to a majority of the people that were on these medications have found a burden as a result, and that burden was with the cost, increased work absenteeism because they have to go to the office. In some cases, because of the upscheduling, doctors have said they're no longer going to prescribe the medicine. They don't want to take the risk of prescribing it, or they change the medicine and force the patients to take something else that would not be a Schedule 2. So in the balance of all of this, a majority of the people that were on the medications found that there was more cost, more stigma associated with it, and are very dissatisfied with the change. You know, and here's something that I think the listeners should understand. Hydrocodone or Vicodin-like drugs were the most commonly prescribed opioid in the country. They were the most common prescribed drug in the country before the upscheduling. They're still very commonly prescribed. But if you take a look at all of the opioids that are prescribed, it was associated with the least harm relative to the amount prescribed. Yet they were successful. That is, the DEA was successful in upscheduling it, and now that has caused a great burden, I believe, for a large number of patients. We in the long run, we'll have to wait and see if this was just a temporary burden to patients or if, indeed, there is going to be a long-term consequences of this. I will also add that in our survey, some people said that because their doctor discharged them from their practice or refused to prescribe this this medicine anymore, some of them said that they went to the street to buy drugs, and some said that they were considering suicide. So I can't see that. Certainly there have been, I think, unanticipated consequences of this upscheduling that have not been good.
Dr. Lynn Webster, in conversation with Carol Marks. The book that he wrote is titled The Painful Truth, What Chronic Pain Is Really Like and Why It Matters to Each of Us, published by Webster Media. If you'd like to find out more information about the book or Dr. Lynn Webster or the subject of pain, go to LynnWebsterMD.com. That's LynnWebsterMD.com. Lynn is spelled L-Y-N-N. WebsterMD.com. I'm Michael Harrison in the Anchor Chair. You're listening to A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. If you want to check out our website and find out all kinds of information about Carol Marks and resources for better living, it's atouchofgray.com, atouchofgray.com, and we spell gray with an E. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, will continue right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. You may recognize the symptoms of elderly depression, loss of appetite, weight loss, social withdrawal, problems with hygiene, neglecting personal well-being, or even a sadness that lasts over 2 weeks. Sound familiar? Here's what you can do about it. Exercise, eat well, and don't forget to socialize. Researchers at Duke University suggest exercising at least 3 times a week to keep the body and mind healthy. That means swimming, walking, and maybe light exercise classes with the approval of your medical doctor. Another key to happiness is maintaining self-esteem through clubs and groups. You might consider the gardening club or a musical choir. And lastly, treat your body well and it will thank you by feeling well. That means practicing good nutrition and eating well-balanced meals daily. Naturally, the needs of patients vary, but feel free to consult a geriatric specialist to make a personalized treatment plan. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at premiergeriatricrn.com.
Retrievers, Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with 4 legs and a tail. My husband and I train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. And our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed them very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat, but adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite's the bomb.
We tell everybody we know about Dynavite.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite, it's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com. You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it. We can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we're joined again by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman is one of the nation's leading experts on scams and fraud and identity theft, and he's the author of books such as The Truth About Avoiding Scams and Identity Theft Alert, published by Prentice Hall. His website is titled scamicide.com. Steve is here now to talk about obituary scams. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, scammers have no sympathy for anyone, as evidenced by the many scams that are based on obituaries. For years, scammers would scan the obituaries and go to Social Security's Death Master File, where the names of deceased Americans are available along with their Social Security numbers, and then use that information on the deceased in order to make them a victim of identity theft by obtaining credit, filing phony income tax returns, or other tactics. Easy access by scammers to the Death Master File has been largely closed by legislation that took a long time to be made effective. Scammers also will look for information in obituaries about the names of family members and then use that information for purposes of the infamous grandparent scam, where the grandparent gets a telephone call late at night from a scammer posing as the grandchild who, under the guise of some emergency, tricks the grandparent into sending money to the scammer. Another scam is scammers will call the families of people they see in obituaries and claim their creditors are the deceased and that the family must pay a debt owed by the deceased. And then finally, scammers will also deliver packages by messengers or on a COD basis, claiming that the package was something ordered by the deceased. It's only after the family member has paid the cash on delivery charges and opened the package that the family finds the package is just filled with old newspapers and magazines merely used as weight. Scammers prey on people at their most vulnerable, so it's at the times like the death of a family member that you really have to be your most vigilant. When writing an obituary, don't put in specific information, such as names that could be used by a scammer of children or grandchildren. Also, contact the three major credit reporting bureaus, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian, to seal the credit report of the deceased in order to avoid the risk of identity theft. Because that way, even if someone gets the Social Security number and other information on the deceased, they're not going to be able to open credit. If someone contacts you claiming a debt that was owed by the deceased requires payment right now, demand written confirmation for you to review before paying any alleged debts. And don't be pressured. Don't be pressured to act quickly by a purported debt collector. Finally, if a COD package comes, refuse. Refuse to pay until you can confirm that the delivery is legitimate. You know, it's kind of a sad situation, but you have to recognize that these scammers truly have no sympathy, and the only place you're going to find that helping hand is at the end of your own arm.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Wiseman joins us every week here on A Touch of Gray. He's a senior correspondent on the show. He's also a prolific writer, a lawyer, and an expert on scams and fraud, as well as many of the topics we talk about. He's written Identity Theft Alert and The Truth About Avoiding Scams, both published by Prentice Hall, and his website. Check it out. It's very, very valuable. It's scamicide.com. Steve Wiseman. I'm Michael Harrison. I want to thank Dwayne Doobie Jr. on the front line, our producer, putting it all together. And, of course, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and a champion in the battle against ageism. And remember, no matter how many years you have, you know, on your odometer, no matter how many times you've taken that voyage around the sun, it's never too late to follow your dreams, to follow your passions, and to really enjoy your life to its fullest. Never too late at all. So get cracking at it. I'm Michael Harrison. Thank you for joining us. Join us again next weekend right here on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.